You have to find out what the rules. I don't know what the rules are. Is it Mahaprabhu or Mahaprabhu?
No rules.
What's that?
No rules.
Is it Chali or Choli? Choli. What's that? Oh, anyhow, whatever we do, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu knows. Mahaprabhu,
Mahaprabhu,
Chali,
Chali,
Haila,
Haila,
Tripati,
Tripati,
Trimale,
Trimale,
Chaturbhuj,
Chaturbhuj.
That we know, it's Chaturbhuj. Murti,
Murti,
Dekhi,
Dekhi,
Vyankataidriye,
Vyankataidriye,
Chale,
Chale,
Mahaprabhu Chali Aila, Mahaprabhu Chali Aila Tripati Trimale,
Mahaprabhu Chali Aila Tripati Trimale,
Chaturbhuja Murti, Dekhi, Vyankataidriye, Katadriye chale. Mahaprabhu chale aila tripati trimale.
Mahaprabhu chale aila tripati trimale.
Chatur buddha murti deki vyankatyadriye chale.
Chatur buddha murti deki vyankatyadriye chale.
Mahaprabhu chali aila tripati trimale.
Mahaprabhu chali aila tripati trimale.
Chaturbhuja murti dekhi vyankatyadi chale.
Chaturbhuja murti dekhi vyankatyadi chale.
Mahaprabhu chali aila tripati trimale.
Mahaprabhu chali aila tripati trimale.
Chaturbhuja murti dekhi Vyankatadriye chale.
Mahaprabhu chali aila tripati trimale.
Mahaprabhu chali aila tripati trimale.
Chaturbhuja murti dekhi vyankatadriye chale.
Chaturbhuja murti dekhi vyankatadriye chale.
Ladies.
Mahaprabhu chali aila tripati trimale. Chaturbhuja murti dekhi vyankatadriye chale.
Mahaprabhu chali aila tripati trimale.
Mahaprabhu chali aila tripati trimale.
Chaturbhuja murti dekhi vyankatadriye chale.
Chaturbhuja murti dekhi vyankatadriye chale.
Mahaprabhu,
Mahaprabhu,
Lord Shri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu,
Lord Shri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu,
Chaira Aila,
Chaira Aila,
arrive by walking,
arrive by walking,
Tripati Trimale,
Tripati Trimale,
at the holy place named Tripati and Trimala,
at the holy place named Tripati and Trimala.
Chaturbhuj,
Chaturbhuj,
four-handed,
Murti,
Didi,
Dekhi,
Singh,
Vyankata Adriye.
So the holy place, Vyankata Hill. Chale, began to proceed. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Shri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu next arrived at Tirupati and Trimala, where he saw a four-handed deity, then he next proceeded towards Vyankata Hill. Purport. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has actually described the chronological order of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's visit. The Tirupati temple is sometimes called Tirupatura, and it is situated on the north side of Arakatta in the district of Chandragiri. So what did I just say? Anyone follow? Mary had a little lamb, its sheep was white as snow. So we'll start over again. Usually we start saying these names and everyone goes far away thinking, what does this have to do with me? I'm in Radhadesh. Might as well be talking about Brooklyn for all we know. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has actually described the chronological order of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's visit. The Tirupati temple is sometimes called Tirupatura. Has anyone ever been to the Tirupati temple?
Radharaman.
What's that? Radharaman. Does anyone know where the Tirupati temple is?
South India?
Yes, we're getting close. So Lord Chaitanya is in South India now, at least we know that much. It is situated on the northern side of Arakatta in the district of Chandragiri. So what does Arka mean? Arka. What's that?
Sun.
Yes, the sun. And what does Chandra mean? So here's the northern side of Arakatta in the district of Chandragiri, the sun and the moon. It is a famous holy place of pilgrimage. And who's the deity in Tirupati?
Yeah.
He's also known as?
Yeah.
I think he's all, who's Balaji?
Balaji.
And he's also known as Balaji. In pursuance of his name, oh here it says, Vyankateshvara, the four-handed Lord Vishnu, the deity of Balaji, with his potency's name Shri and Bhu, is located on the Vyankata Hill, about 8 miles from the Tirupati. This Vyankateshvara deity is in the form of Lord Vishnu. And the place where he is situated is known as Vyankata Kshetra. There are many temples in southern India, but this Balaji temple is especially opulent. A great fair is held there in the months of September and October. There is a railway station called Tirupati on the Southern Railroad. Nimna Tirupati is located in the valley of the Vyankata Hill. There are several temples there also, among which are Govinda Raja and the deity of Lord Ramachandra. Namo Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutta Shrimati Bhakti Vidanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Vityarane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskatya Devasitarane. So what temple are we talking about? It's Tirupati. Is it Tirupati? They pronounce it Tirupati. But why is it pronounced Tirupati? There's no long A. It's a short A. And if it was short U, Tirupati. 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 And where is it? Is on the northern side of what place? What's that? Ara.
Sun and moon and four.
Arakata. Arakata. Long A. Arakata. In the district of?
Chandragiri.
And what deity is there? Balaji. 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 And what is the railroad station it's located on? Tirupati, yes. So here, Lord Chaitanya is visiting the pilgrimage places. Why did he go to visit the pilgrimage places? Was he sightseeing? Yes. Yes. Distributed. What else? What was the initial reason he went to South India? Yes.
Purify the
place. Yeah. That's by chanting the holy name. What else? Yes.
This could be also to set examples for devotees that travel in this place.
Yes. Good. What was the original reason he went to South India? What was the excuse he gave? Yes. Because Vishwarup had disappeared, had left and taken sannyas, and he wanted to go and look for his brother to find out what happened to him. So that was the reason he gave. And while he was down there, of course, he visited these holy places. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura says, he sings in his song, Gaur, does anyone know that song? Bhakatarena, Bhajan Anush, Anush, Shuddha Bhakacha Charna Renu, Bhajantam Anukula, Bhakata Seva, Paramasiri, Prema, Mula. So in that song he says, may I always visit the holy places that Lord Chaitanya visited. So why would we want to visit the holy places that Lord Chaitanya visited?
To have the dust at his lotus feet.
The dust of his lotus feet. That's pretty esoteric. Well, maybe someone could just go there and collect the dust for us and we wouldn't have to go through all the trouble of visiting these places.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's important. Just like in the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we find that Vidura asked again, or had asked, Maitreya Muni to please tell me about how Krishna created the world. So one of the reasons why he asked that, well, he mentioned, I've already heard about this creation many times, he said. It's not that it was the first time he was going to hear about creation, he just wanted to hear it again. But now I want to hear the creation in relationship to how Krishna is doing it. I want to hear about the whole material universe and how it's all intimately related with Krishna. So similarly, to visit the holy places where Lord Ramachandra, for instance, here mentions the deity of Govinda Raja, and the deity of Lord Ramachandra. If we go and visit the places where Lord Ramachandra had his pastimes, what will we remember? We'll remember Lord Ramachandra. But if we visit the places where Lord Chaitanya visited, these holy places, what will we remember? We'll remember Lord Chaitanya remembering Lord Ramachandra. So there's a big difference. One is in the mood of separation, and the other is in the mood of just plain ordinary remembrance. And when it's infused with the remembrance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu feeling separation from Radha and Krishna, then automatically it's not only do we feel the separation or the remembrance, but it's also in the mood of, in its relation to Radha and Krishna. So as Gaudiya Vaishnavas, especially, we want to see everything in relation to Radha and Krishna and the mood of Lord Chaitanya's separation. All the incarnations, all the avatars, all the different places, this whole material universe, everything ultimately should help us remember Krishna and his pastimes in Goloka Vrindavan. It is said that there are five potent processes of devotional service, and one of the potent processes is Mathura Vasa. Mathura Vasa means to reside in Mathura, or in a holy place where Krishna had his pastimes. But we just don't want to visit any holy place, because there are many holy places where Krishna had his pastimes. But we want to visit them in such a way as that we have association with Lord Chaitanya, Radha and Krishna, the residents of Vrindavan. And therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is giving us this opportunity by going to these holy places and displaying his pastimes there. Now, there's an elaborate explanation of how to get there by Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta Sarasvati Prabhupāda. Of course, unfortunately, these things are outdated because railroads change and means of getting there change. But in any case, it's indicated here that Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta Sarasvati Prabhupāda and our Prabhupāda, they had some reason to write about where these holy places are located, because they thought that maybe sometime we'd go there. Although Narottam Das Thakur also sings in one of his songs, what is the use of going to these holy places? But one of the uses for us to go to the holy places, we're not going there for punya, simply to, or for sightseeing, or to get some mahaprasad there. We're going there in order to absorb ourselves in remembrance of Krishna. If we stay in one place for too long, generally what happens, we get familiar with the place. Unless you're a resident of Goloka Vrindavan. Luckily there, everything is new at every moment. But here, unfortunately, our consciousness is not always new at every moment. Sometimes we keep the same material conceptions. And therefore, it is said, familiarity breeds contempt. So after a while, we start seeing things in a materialistic way. Materialistic way is we think we know everything, we have everyone figured out, we see all the good qualities and we minimize them of these devotees, we see all the bad qualities and we maximize them. And therefore, after some time, everything becomes material. We think, oh, the same old deities, I saw that dress so many times, and he's still playing that same old flute. Although I can't hear it, it's probably the same old tune. Therefore, we start becoming familiar. But if you go to a new place, it's very hard to get familiar because no one knows who you are, and no one knows who, you don't know who anyone else is. You don't know anything practically. Therefore, there's some feeling of dependence. There's some feeling that you have to surrender, or else there might be some difficulty. So some feeling of surrender, dependence on Krishna, hopefully, is there. And therefore, there is a better opportunity to become receptive to the value of the holy place. Otherwise, when you get to know, if you get too familiar, then the feeling of dependence, of submission, of respect, so many different positive feelings and moods diminish, and therefore one may not take advantage sometimes of the opportunities presented in a temple or in even some holy place. Therefore, it is advised that only very advanced devotees, the Paramahamsas, the advanced sannyasis, there is Bahudha, and Sri Bhavudak, what's the other one? Bhavudak. No, this the first one is Kutika. Kutika, Bhavudak, Parvadakacharya, and Paramahansa. So only the Paramahansas are advised to stay in one place, because wherever they go, for them, every moment is fresh in Krishna consciousness. They're residents of the world where everything is new all the time. Everything is more exciting at every moment. But because our consciousness is on the material conception, we say that our consciousness is on the material conception, because we're seeing through material intelligence sometimes. Sometimes through spiritual intelligence, sometimes through material intelligence, and therefore sometimes our conceptions are mundane. And therefore our experience is mundane. If we stay in one place for too long, then our whole experience becomes mundane after some time. But if we travel to the new places, and the holy name, the deities, all the different elements of deity worship, all the different five elements of the holy place, service to the devotees, the deity worship, and hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, it is all new. For instance, if a new speaker comes and they say something, we're thinking, what will they going to say? Because we think, well, maybe I'll hear something I haven't heard before. Someone like myself comes, we think, well, I already heard everything he had to say. He's going to tell us some of the things I already heard before. So what's the sense of paying so much attention? So this idea of new, just like in the Brahma Samhita, it is said, which I forget the first line, Shiram Shiravid Vyascha Sumahan Te Neme Shardakyo Vad Vrajitina Hyatra Samaya. That there at every moment, everything is new because there's no time. No one can think, even when one thinks about the past, it's new also. One sees the past as something new. One thinks of the future, that's new. And the present is always new also. There's no conception of past, present, and future as we see it. Of course, here there's no past, present, and future because it's simply punak punas charvita charvananam. Everyone has been chewing the same thing since time immemorial without any pleasure or juice, any real substantial pleasure or juice at least. But Maya has convinced us since time immemorial to go for it one more time. This time there's going to be real nectar. But other than that, it's the same thing over and over again. But in the spiritual world, everything is always new all the time. So it's exactly the opposite. Just like, for instance, a shadow is always a shadow. It doesn't matter how many varieties are going on in the real activity. For instance, you may be having a big feast, but in the shadow, it's the same old shadow. The shadow doesn't really get more beautiful or whatever. Maybe it seems to be more beautiful, but it never becomes more substantial than a shadow. It doesn't matter how many different changes you make of it. But what's going on from the person or the persons who are creating the shadows, that may be full of varieties. Similarly, the spiritual world is full of varieties and the material world is just a shadow. So that one who's living in the shadow conception of life, everything is just always the same old shadow. But when you go to a new shadow, then you think, well, this is a new shadow, and you become a little bit more receptive. And because we're carrying our shadow conception of life, we go to a new holy place and we become a little bit more receptive to it. Or a new speaker, or we learn a new way of chanting the holy name, someone new is leading or something. Something new attracts our mind that this is new, maybe this time it'll work. Although spiritual activities are always full of substantiality, but sometimes we think it's the same old thing, because that's our condition. Now we're going to hear about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's visiting many holy places, and for most of us we'll think, well, this is not very interesting. Trying to understand what these holy places, their names are. It's hard enough to understand the names of, in Belgium here, all the different cities, some of which we've never visited. So what to speak of these places, where most of us were saying, I'll never go there. And if I went there, I wouldn't even remember that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited there. But this is actually, all these different places are that, say, in the future, there may be, sometimes His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj takes devotees to South India, different places of pilgrimage, and they go and visit these places, and they talk about the activities there, and the place becomes spiritualized. Not just by visiting the place. There are many people who go to Vrindavan to do a business at Lloyd Bazaar. But it's not that they're in ecstasy doing business at Lloyd Bazaar. Or they come back, you know. Do you know, you know, I was at Lloyd Bazaar, and I guess when I was buying dhotis, I saw Krishna wandering in Lloyd Bazaar. He was trying to get a dhoti also. No, if one goes to Vrindavan with a materialistic conception of life, that's material, that's what one will find in Vrindavan. One will find dhotis, and one will find saris, one will find jewelry, but one will not find Krishna there. But because Vrindavan is so much connected with the pastimes of Krishna, if we go there and hear, this is where the Keshi demon was killed, this is where Putana demon was killed, this is where Krishna ate clay. If we go there, then actually this will invoke within us the memories of Krishna. And the place will not seem, oh, here's some Vrindavan with some dirt and pigs running around, very crowded now, so many rickshaws. You walk down the street, you might get run over by a rickshaw or by a two-wheeler or a three-wheeler or whatever else. It will not seem like an ordinary place because one will think, oh, here is where Krishna ate clay. Prabhupada gives the example that just like a child has some shoes. So if you see the shoes of your child in the street, then you become very, the shoes become very dear. But if you see any old shoes on the street, then you either you'll try and steal them or you'll try and get away from them. But because the shoes have some connection with your dear child, therefore they become dear also. The little booties. Just like sometimes they distribute the deity paraphernalia. And sometimes people pay substantial euros for those little booties. So they're just little silver booties, whatever they are. But because they're connected with our dear object of affection, Sri Sri Radha Gopinath or Lalita Vishakha, therefore they become dear to us. We want, because when we see them, they remind us of our object of affection. Similarly, the places where Krishna had his pastimes, then everything in connection with that pastime becomes also, helps us invoke our affection. The land becomes dear to us, the little memorial place where Krishna ate the dirt becomes dear to us, never mind it was perhaps not even the original one. The Uluka, I think it's called, the mortar where Krishna had dragged, although they have a little mortar there, it's hard to figure out how that mortar could have possibly stuck between two trees. This is such a little tiny mortar. But even if it's not the original mortar, Uluka, but still it marks the place somewhere where that mortar was, and therefore even that mortar becomes dear to us because it reminds us of our dear Krishna and his pastimes and the devotees, etc. Similarly, when we remember our dear object of affection, Lord Chaitanya, and when he went to those places, his pastimes, then everything in that place becomes dear to the devotee. Even the residents, ordinarily we think that we may be critical of the residents, whatever, but because somehow or another they're connected with our object of affection, we set aside our natural critical attitude And we, even they may even become dear to us. At least we don't criticize them. We go to Vrindavan, we'll see so many persons there who ordinarily we'd spontaneously criticize them without any hesitation, feel good about it. That I'm so discriminating, that this person fits into this category, etc. But even sometimes you go there, you see the Muslims, they're doing things which are not very Vaishnava-like. But one tries to control the mind a little bit, because we know we're in Vrindavan, and you get 100,000 times the pious reactions for good things, and you get some 1,000 times reaction for bad things. So therefore, 1,000 times seems it's all right to criticize someone, but if I'm going to get 1,000 times reactions for that criticism, therefore I better be a little careful. But of course, we live in Vrindavan long enough, and we think, oh, I'm a resident of Vrindavan. I'm free to do whatever I want. I got enough pious credit, you know, in my account. I can do what feels good, you know, criticize the residents, get into the politics, and whatever else. Hear all kinds of philosophies, and hang out in the restaurant for a while with my friends, whatever else we think is will satisfy some of my inner desires. But if one goes there briefly for some time, stays there, then one is naturally cautious, because one is, first of all, when we hear about the reactions and the pious activities, etc. So we're afraid of, you know, 1,000 times, you know, maybe I would have been hit by a thunderbolt for what I'm thinking, but 1,000 thunderbolts, I'm not going to survive. In other words, the whole idea is somehow or another that everything should we become at least respectful within our minds, if not enthusiastic and affectionate, loving. We're not trying to jump to that to the Paramahansa platform, but at least we should try to become respectful or positive, try and see things properly. Not that the pure devotee doesn't understand what's going on. If you go to Vrindavan, I've been to, when I was going sometimes down even to Loy Bazaar to buy something. Sometimes I pass by the Muslim district and they had some pig which they were cooking alive. So it was very unpleasant, especially for the pig, to let everyone know that he was being tortured. Of course, no one really cared for him. I mean, no one could do anything. But it was not very pleasant to hear the sound of the pigs. But in any case, one has to tolerate and not forget about Krishna and fix the mind upon something positive. Not that one doesn't notice the pigs are being cooked in Vrindavan, but one should not dwell on it. One should understand that somehow or another this pig, he may even be going back to Godhead for all we know. At least he's getting a higher birth, because somehow or another he got in the position of being in Vrindavan, sniffing Vrindavan, getting the dust of Vrindavan, hearing the holy name of Vrindavan, and it may be time for him to leave the pig body and get a more elevated position. So it's not bad for the pig, although it may be temporarily rather distressing. In other words, it helps us think a little bit more philosophically about the situation, see things a little bit more clearly, so that we don't become overly critical, we don't become simply simplistic in our vision of things. So even a pure devotee will understand that things are not perfect, in the sense everything is perfect from one point of view, but because people are not on the transcendental platform, therefore it appears to them to be something other than perfect. Perfect arrangement by Krishna, everything's a perfect arrangement by Krishna, but because we don't accept our role in Krishna's pastimes, therefore we accept so many inferior roles in pastimes of illusory energy. But that's all perfect also, to help us get out of this illusory consciousness and eventually come back to our Krishna consciousness. So a devotee For a pure devotee, wherever he goes, he sees everyone, everything related to Krishna. Although, when he takes a second class platform, he preaches, try to help people become Krishna conscious. But even for a neophyte devotee, when he's in a holy place, it invokes or encourages some attempt to see things more philosophically, more Krishna consciously. Lord Chaitanya is visiting all these different places, and by hearing about them, we become encouraged also, maybe to visit them, and when we visit them, then we get experience of how different varieties of places we're able to conceptualize them in Krishna consciousness. And that it helps us advance in devotional service also. Dharma Kshetre, Kuru Kshetre, Samaveda Yutsavaha, Mama Ka Pandavas Chaiva, Kima Kurvata Sanjayaha. That this is seemingly an ordinary place of pilgrimage, or ordinary place, Kuru Kshetra. But it is also Dharma Kshetra, because the battle of Kurukshetra is being fought there, and Lord Krishna is personally present. So when we hear about Kurukshetra, automatically remember Krishna, hopefully. We don't think it's an ordinary place, we wouldn't go there thinking that this is just like Brussels. No, we go there because we think that here Krishna is still speaking the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. Similarly, our whole philosophy of Krishna consciousness is based on association, somehow or another, to associate with Krishna. Now, for an advanced devotee, wherever they are, under all circumstances, they're always associating with Krishna through spontaneous remembrance, because they see everyone and everything in relation to Krishna. Just like I gave the example previously, that in the Krishna book there are many pastimes of Krishna. And in the pastime there are varieties of living entities and circumstances, moods and emotions, but they're all explained in relation to Krishna. For instance, it is said that when Krishna was seen walking on the bank of the Yamuna, he was nicely decorated with tilak on his forehead, and his body was covered with the pulp of sandalwood and tulsi leaves, and his garland with different types of forest flowers. The bumblebees became mad after the treasure and sweet nectar of the atmosphere, and being pleased by the humming sound of the bees, Krishna began to play upon his flute. And the combined sounds became so sweet to hear that the aquatic birds, like the ducks, the swans, and the cranes, became stunned. They closed their eyes, and they stopped swimming and flying, became stunned, they closed their eyes, and entered into a trance, a meditation and worship of Krishna. So here, we're talking about cranes and ducks and swans and bees and rivers and forest flowers, etc. But because they're in relation to Krishna, Krishna is the object, he's the root, he's the thing that everything's centered around, therefore they all become dear to us. Ordinarily, if we hear the sound of a bee, we become quite disturbed. Here it is, the wasp season again in Radha Desh. And the bees are going to come while I'm taking prasadam and sting them. So we think, oh, they're spoiling my prasad, the bees. But if we remember this pastime, hear the sound of the bees, and it helps us remember the bees humming around Krishna's garlands and his body with his sandalwood pulp and tulsi leaves, then they'll help us remember Krishna. And therefore, even the wasps here in Radha Desh will become dear to us, because they're helping us advance in devotional service and Krishna consciousness. That's the advanced devotee, because whatever circumstance we're under, every sound, sight, smell, touch, everything helps them remember Krishna. Therefore everything becomes dear to them, because Krishna is their dearmost. And therefore everything becomes equally dear to them, because it helps them remember Krishna, and eventually they see that nothing is different from Krishna. The holy places are places of practice of that. It's not so that wherever, any place we are, that becomes also a place of where we remember Krishna too. I'll stop there. Any questions? Comments? I thought I was just going to read all these different holy places, but next week someone can do it. Yes?
Yes. When we visit nice holy places, sometimes we may feel that we are not so advanced in order to fully appreciate the pastimes of Lord Krishna, even though we may have some attraction to Lord Krishna, of course. But so is it a correct mentality to visit the holy places, at least to have the association of wonderful Vaishnavas who really have relied something on Krishna, and is it the correct mentality to at least visit these places to have the association of such Vaishnavas who chant nicely the holy names and so on and so forth?
Yes, of course. And then if we have a nice association, then we'll understand what the holy place is. We'll understand how to act in such a way is that we'll realize that this is a holy place. If we become holy, then all the places will become holy places to us. Yes? Because it's a place of sacrifice. Even when Krishna came, there was an eclipse, everyone came there and they performed sacrifices. I believe it's supposed to be some hub of the universe, according to the Bhagavatam, and therefore it's considered an auspicious place to perform sacrifices. And it's not Krishna, just like Vrindavan, Krishna appeared in Vrindavan, but it wasn't that was the first time Krishna ever visited Vrindavan. Every day of Brahma he comes and manifests his pastimes in Vrindavan. So those who are advanced devotees, they know that. They know where Krishna's going to, where he's had his pastimes in past yugas. Yeah. Yes.
It says, Maharaj, that in Mayapur everything is devotional service. Not if you think of
that's not true at all. Who said that?
For instance, if you sleep in Mayapur, they say it's like considered offering a basis.
Well, maybe when some people sleep in Mayapur. I wouldn't go, park myself in Mayapur. The idea... We all know it's not exactly like offering obeisances. But there's some element there due to association. The idea is that because one is infused with Krishna consciousness there, Lord Chaitanya is having his pastimes there, therefore there's some spiritual atmosphere created. One who is in Mayapur, in the right mentality, doing the right activities, then they'll become very receptive to those pastimes and the association and whatever else that's going on there, that's spiritual. But if one is engaged, goes there for other than devotional activities and is performing other than devotional activities and is not in the proper consciousness, when they go to sleep there, it's just as good as going to sleep anywhere else. But the devotees are hearing this, it's encouraging them. It's the devotees who are hearing this, not that some materialist is thinking, I'm going there, I'll do my business, I'll set up a business there, I'll make a lot of money, at the same time I'll go back to Godhead because all my sinful activities will be spiritualized there. But this is an encouragement for the devotees who are actually seriously trying to advance in devotional service, that if they're in that mentality, then everything they're doing they'll make some advancement there. But for most of us, when we pay obeisances, it is like... Most of us, when we do pay obeisances anywhere, it's like sleeping anyhow, because we're unconscious when we pay obeisances. We mumble something, we're not even quite sure what we mumble. We think, well, I'm a good person because, good exercise, I got down on the ground and no one can criticize me. My fire digestion increased, so... Yes?
If they say, if you think about Tulasi, for instance, it's always auspicious.
Yes, could be. For us, if we're in the devotional mood, it's auspicious. But for someone who's thinking, but just like sometimes they make beads out of tulasi. So if someone is thinking, I'm going to grow so many tulasi plants, pull them out of their roots and, you know, grind them into beads, and I'm going to make so much money, I'm going to retire in Hawaii and surf all day. They're thinking tulasi is not very auspicious. But for a devotee, generally, tulsi will invoke a devotional attitude. Yes.
You spoke about this, that in Vrindavan sometimes you can see some people are acting very cruel and killing pigs and things like that. You can be overwhelmed by that. I mean, is it is this like this effect of Maya, if somebody is really overwhelmed?
Yeah, of course. It's not that Maya is also present in Vrindavan. She's Krodha Maya. So for those who come to Vrindavan, we're not there absorbing Krishna consciousness, and Maya also has an effect too. Otherwise, if the Muslims or whoever else is acting cruelly, then how, if they were actually in ecstasy in devotional activity, seeing the pig as a soul, maybe even an advanced soul who previously was in Vrindavan, maybe it's their brother, a Muslim, then how could they kill the pig? How could they cook it alive in Vrindavan? They wouldn't be able to do it. But for a devotee, we go there because we're aspiring devotees. Therefore, we may become overwhelmed by our material association, our material conception of what's going on. And we may forget Krishna. Vrindavan is an auspicious place because it's a place where we can absorb ourselves in remembrance of Krishna. We walk down the streets of Brussels, you know, what are we going to remember? You know, some general from the from World War I who fought, and they name a street after him. We'll look at the posters of some person getting intoxicated. So one would have to be very advanced to remember Krishna there, walking downtown Brussels. But if we go to Vrindavan, you know, Radharani's name is painted everywhere. Everyone's saying Jai Radhe. They're selling bead bags in the local store. And they have statues of Krishna everywhere. Then one would have to be very, at least even now, one would have to try hard to get Krishna there. But if you stay there long enough, then you get familiar with the place. If you really have material desires, then you find out all the places where you can go and forget Krishna. And of course, in Vrindavan now, they've introduced rock music and videos and everything. So Vrindavan, its auspiciousness for a devotee, one who's trying to become Krishna conscious, is also in some ways diminishing. The more they introduce, they even have a McDonald's in. Here, out right in between Agra and Vrindavan, Mathura, they have a McDonald's. Yes. I think it's a vegetarian McDonald's. They may just serve some chicken or something. They don't serve all the cows there. Yes.
So when a suggested person leaves his body and they put tulsi on his tongue, as is described before the cremation, then does that have any benefit?
Something's there. At least the thought, at least for us, there'll be some benefit. Or some concern for the person. And Krishna is in our heart. He notes it. It's not that Krishna is thinking, well, you know, you're just my aspiring devotee. I don't really care what you think, what your sentiments are. You may like this person, but this person, I don't like at all. No, if we're aspiring to become devotees, Krishna is very soft-hearted. Therefore, our prayers for someone also has an effect. So Krishna notes it all, and he's eventually gets back to Srimati Radharani through the super succession. And Krishna, he's very soft-hearted. He has to follow Srimati Radharani's suggestions. He's completely under her control. And therefore, it definitely has an effect. You pray for someone, you have some good wishes, and it's connected to Krishna through the simple succession. And Krishna feels obliged to fulfill that prayer. Even if it's coming from a neophyte, but because it's connected through the spiritual master and the simple succession, therefore Krishna feels obliged to help that person you're praying for. And who knows, maybe he's still there, hovering around, seeing that Tulsi lady thing. Wow, they kept on talking to me about Tulsi and about all these different things. I never took them seriously. But here I am now in this body, now, you know, they'll appreciate it. It'll help them remember Krishna. And of course, Tulsi is, even that, her leaves, because she's a pure devotee, absorbed in Krishna consciousness, her leaves are fully spiritual. And they'll have an effect too. They purify, even something that's called the Gyata Sukriti. Mentality may not be right, even the activity is not right, but it's still there's some potency there. Fire will always act like fire, even if one is not conscious of it. Anything else? Of course, the idea is just like if you're taking Tulsi leaves, you put it on a McDonald's hamburger. Then you'll get the sinful reaction eating the hamburger. But still, because Tulsi is there, there's some effect there. But we don't purposely add Tulsi leaves to McDonald's hamburgers, thinking it's neutralizing the effect of eating the hamburger, because it won't. It's hard to use such a graphic. Yes.
Maybe it's a silly question, but it's related to what you just said. In Vrindavan, they usually sell soap or even shampoo with tulasi in it. Is it correct? Or?
Not really. Tulsi is not really meant for shampoo, to clean our hair. Anything else? Okay, we'll stop there. Thank you very much. Prantara, Shri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Kijai. Srila Prabhupada, Kijai. Gaura Paramananda Devi.